All right. First vote off without a hitch. Moving on to item three, citizen comments. Do we have any citizen comments? We've got probably the fullest house at a personnel committee meeting since during my tenure. That's exciting. But no citizen comments. All right.
Mostly staff.
That's all right. Staff and some guests that we'll hear from later. And moving on to item four, old business, consideration of applications to fill planning commission vacancy. Do we want to entertain a motion to reorder the agenda?
Yes, please.
All right.
I'd like to make that motion.
I'll second it.
Bring it up last for executives. If I'm not mistaken.
I think you all want to move item A under
5A.
New business. Yes.
Mayor, was your motion to put item 5A, reorder that and go ahead and tackle that first?
Yes, sir. Because again, we've got to go to executive session, so that is my motion of 5A. Come forward. Strategic plan.
Yes, that's not the executive session that you have. It's under new business, item A.
Yeah. So we want to switch old business, consider of application to fill planning commission, move that down, and move forward 5A.
Correct, yeah.
Yeah.
And probably B2 while we're at it.
Mm-hmm. Do I have a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
All right. Let's look at the strategic plan.
All right. Well, I will introduce Bob O'Neill and Kendra Stewart. They are both with the Riley Center for Livable Communities. It's a center with the College of Charleston. Bob O'Neill serves as the executive in residence for the Riley Center and a fellow. He is the former executive director for ICMA between 2002 and 2016. Was also the city manager for Hampton, Virginia. Kendra is a professor at the College of Charleston and also the director of the Riley Center. She also serves as the president of the American Association of Public Administration. And I sent you all their full bios, pretty impressive. I won't go through each detail, but I reached out to them because I know of their work. And as the city was talking about developing and pursuing a strategic plan for the city, I felt that they were able to present a good proposal for the city to consider. And I asked them to put something together for your consideration and asked them to come in here and have a conversation with you all and ultimately with full council before we move forward. It's the first time that the city has pursued a strategic plan. So lots of questions, I assume, and I felt like they were the perfect people to maybe answer those questions and walk us through what a strategic plan would look like. So without further ado, I'll let them, Bob and Kendra, I don't know if you want to start.
I think Kendra's going to start.
Good morning. I don't need to introduce myself now. Thank you, Desiree, for the kind introduction. I was just going to briefly introduce the Riley Center, and then Bob will walk us through what we've proposed. And again, we're just starting to put something out there as a suggestion and are happy to tailor this in any way that suits your needs, and that's generally how these work. So I'll just briefly tell you a little bit about the Riley Center. It's a institute associated with the School of Humanities and Social Sciences at the College of Charleston. We've been around since the 80s, and our mission is to leverage the resources of the College of Charleston, the faculty, staff, students, and professionals that we work with, to work with communities, local governments, and nonprofits on issues of livability. And so through that, we work a lot with local governments across the state of South Carolina. We oversee the South Carolina City County Management Association, the Municipal Clerks Association, and the Clerks of Council. So through that, we do a fair amount of professional development, as well as working with communities on issues that are impacting them. So we've done a number of strategic plans for local governments across the state, as well as nonprofits in our region. And we've done other types of services that generally involve things such as public engagement or applied research. So someone wants to know how their community feels about an issue, we can do surveys or things like that. So we can, of course, provide you, and I think we've shared one example of a plan that Bob has worked with recently, but we've done a number throughout the state. So I'll let Bob now talk
Thanks,
about what
Kendra.
We're proposing.
Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you both very much for being here.
Sure.
Oh, our pleasure. Thanks for having us. I'm just going to walk through. This is a general methodology that's been used by literally hundreds of communities and probably thousands of businesses and opportunity here is to just sort of go through that methodology and then to talk a little bit about how we can customize it to what you want to accomplish tonight. Because there are choices everybody makes going through this process, and we'll try to frame some of those choices for you. So just thinking about this for a second, on the left-hand column here is essentially the methodologies that most everyone would use if they were going through this. So the environmental scan, identifying strengths, weaknesses, threats, and opportunities, vision statement, mission statement, sometimes people do those as one, sometimes as two. We can talk a little bit about that. Then an implementation plan, and then alignment and accountability. So one of the things that's interesting for lots of folks, and we were talking a little bit about strategic plans that end up on the shelf that nobody uses, is they most of the ones who end up with not being used very effectively forget the steps of implementation and the alignment and accountability components. Who's going to do what when? Mm-hmm. And so part of what we'll talk a little bit about is how to sort of do that. So this is the sort of step-by-step process. We'll start with the environmental scan, and then you end up with the sort of the implementation and accountability plan. So let me just walk through. So these are the kinds of things that you would see typically in an environmental scan. The choice that you're going to make relative to the environmental scan is one option is what you do is you look at your historical trends over time, and you focus almost exclusively on the Isle of Palms. The other option is to do that, and in addition, pick some peer communities that you would measure against, so you would sort of benchmark where you are. So those are kinds of choices that you make. Is sometimes people are very comfortable just saying we want to focus on us, where we've been and where we want to go. Others would like to sort of say, well, there are three or four other communities out there that are similar to us, and we'd like to sort of benchmark against those. So these kinds of things are the things that you look at. You look at demographics, you look at population, you look at income, you look at the natural resources, the particular advantages that you have as Isle of Palms versus what others have. And then you look at, obviously, the economic drivers that are in play. So anything from, you know, tourism to sea level rise would come up in those kinds of conversations. So the environmental scan hopefully would give you some sort of frame which would identify the forces that are likely to be of impact to you as you go through the decisions that you as a council and a community need to make. Then you do, from that, you'd identify what the strengths and weaknesses and threats and opportunities are. This is a process where we would engage the staff and we would engage you in that conversation because those are judgment calls that people need to make. There's not something that necessarily would be everybody would agree to. So the opportunity here is to have a fairly significant discussion about what you think those threats and opportunities might look like and how then you might frame a discussion about what you might do about those kinds of things. And then again, I mentioned that a lot of the communities will just pick, they'll sort of merge the vision mission issue. Lots will keep it separate. So people ask me often, what's the difference between the two? So the vision would be, and I'll make one up here, is the Isle of Palms would be the most livable community in South Carolina. That would be the vision statement.
So it's make that up.
So that would be the aspirational statement, and the mission statement would be to provide the services necessary to support that vision. So those would be the two kinds of mission, vision kinds of discussions that you would have. And then the implementation, what we indicated is that you start to develop a series of goals that you want to do. Typically, those are in the neighborhood of 4 to 5 major sort of focus areas that you want to, and I think Desiree probably sent to you a couple of examples that I think were pretty good examples about how you sort of identify the focus. It doesn't mean that's the only things you do in terms of the city government of Isle of Palms, but these are the things that we think are so important that we're going to try to focus our time and attention to make sure we accomplish what we want to do in those particular areas. You then develop a series of strategies and tactics to try to implement around those particular focus areas. And as I said, then we start to work with the staff on an implementation plan. And then one of the things that is sort of unique to the local government community is that you also have a whole series of statutory plans that you have out there. You have comprehensive plans, you have budgets, you have all of those kinds of things. So how do you integrate these two things so you don't get conflict and you don't get duplication and you then be able to coherently identify the departmental work plans that are going to be necessary, so you don't have a whole set of work plans on the conference plan that are in conflict with what you want to do in the strategic plan. The part that I think is important for you to think about is where the council wants to engage. What we were thinking is that at each of these major steps, we would engage the council in a conversation so you would see all of the work that has been done and then allow you to have both a reaction to it and input before we move to the next stage. So at the end of the environmental scan, we do a presentation for you. At the end of the sort of threats and opportunities, we do one, and then as we would do the same thing at the end of the sort of the strategies and tactics, so that at each stage you would have, you'd be fully aware and engaged in the process, and secondly, you'd be able to frame the sort of the next step, so we are focused around the things that you think are the most important. So that's sort of the outline of what we thought would be an approach. I often get asked, how long does this take? And there's no real right answer to that question. I think in conversation with Desiree, I think if you go beyond sort of 6 months, you sort of lose the energy. Mm-hmm. So somewhere between the 4 and 6 months, depending on how many of, if you decide to do peer comparisons, then there's an additional set of work that's got to happen with regard to that, because you have gathered information from different communities. But somewhere between the 4 and 6 month range is, I think, a reasonable one, which would keep the energy in the work and hopefully get you a product sufficient. You're also going to have to integrate with comprehensive plan schedules and those kinds of things, so hopefully that would work. So we're happy to answer any questions. As we said, we tried to send you two examples. They're different, but to show you the kind of choices you can make about how you think this thing might work for you, and secondly, what the product would look like for you.
Bob, Bob, you and I were talking before the meeting about strategic plan. Mm-hmm. I mean, from the corporate world,
yep,
we had our strategic plans.
Right.
Every 6 months or so, we'd get them out, blow the dust off of them. But keeping it living, breathing, quantitative, you know, and moving things forward. What's been your experience of that with the municipalities you've worked with?
So what we typically do is in the implementation plan is we try to integrate that, and I'll give you one example that we've just done recently, when you do your budget, each one would have sort of a icon. If you look at the Anderson plan, mm-hmm, they talked about the series of focus areas and an icon. And in every document, for instance, even in your council agenda, there would be an icon attached to that item that shows you that links to a component of, mm-hmm, the strategic plan. So the budget, all of your work sessions, all those things would contain connections to it. I also suggest one of the ways to do it is that it, maybe not at every council meeting, but maybe once a month or so, there's a status report that's given about what's going on, what's likely to happen next, what issues that have come up is related to the strategic planning process. So part of it is it's the choice you need to make, but your point's well taken. If you don't link it to the things that you're doing every day, then in fact it becomes a term paper that sits on the shelf, and that's right, what you don't want to do. Mm-hmm.
And what's also been your experience in how the municipality connects with the citizens?
So that's a choice that you need to make. Some of these are very driven by community engagement. Some of them, I know you've done community forums and surveys already, so one option is to sort of mine that first and use that as the elements that will start to begin to frame the beginning parts of the strategic plan. And then we might, based on your reaction to it, say we need to go validate that again, either with community forums or with surveys. So that's a choice you can make as you go through the process itself.
Okay. Thank you.
Any questions?
If you don't mind.
Please.
Y'all's backgrounds are incredible. Thank you all so much. And we love to work with the College of Charleston. How much of the work is actually done by the two of y'all? How much is done by the students? And I'm sure there's a lot of oversight by everybody. Mm-hmm. And don't get me wrong, I'm a college free generation of College of Charleston, so you're talking to somebody who loves the school.
Gotcha.
Let me start.
Okay.
So I think most of this work is going to be done in partnership between Desiree and the staff, mm-hmm, and Kendra and myself. the reason I say that is there's, first of all, you have better access and knowledge of most of that data that we're going to need anyway. Second of all, you want to own it at the end. You don't want our product that you then have to implement, right? So most of this will be guiding the process, and we'll be working with the staff to do that. If we want to do some additional surveys, and if we want to do some focus groups, if we want to do some data analysis on peers, for instance, I would suggest we probably engage the graduate students and help us do that, because that's, first of all, that's useful for them. They get a lot out of that. And second of all, it's pretty efficient manpower to use for that purpose.
Yeah, so we generally use the students for data mining, and then if we do some engagement, if we were doing community meetings or support, we found that actually using graduate students can sometimes be more effective than having people like Bob or Ira. It depends on the audience and the group. But so we generally use them in the research piece of it when it's relevant and appropriate, right, as much as y'all are comfortable as well. So.
One last quickly is, I think I just was kind of alluding to it before we got started here, is just talking about the growth that's unbridled across the Tri-County area. And the growth of our islands is not growth. I mean, what you see is what you get. In fact, in some cases, there's probably a decrease in land mass size, and that's not a good thing. That's one of our challenges. But it is something that, we're feeling the effects of everybody's growth around us. And that's a whole other dynamic that, I'm sure y'all will take into effect. And then one of the challenges that I didn't see on here, but I know it's there, would be, the threat of storms.
Sure.
I mean, that's just so huge, not only for Alpine, but for Charleston and the whole low country.
Yeah.
And then I'm sure you work with, besides council, but our building department, our planning commission. And,
right. Yeah, so we would engage the staff. Certainly the planning commission will be, because one of the connections here that's going to be important is to the comprehensive plan work that you're going to do. So we would try to make sure our schedules sort of work so that was the case, and probably would reach out to most of the boards and commissions for their input when we're doing the environmental scans anyway.
And we are due to update the comprehensive plan, and that is something that's going to be on the Planning Commission's agenda. And I had a conversation with Douglas and Bob and Kendra recently on, how do we align the two together? Because we have been updating the comprehensive plan. I don't think, we have used it as much from council's perspective. It tends to be this, a document that people don't refer to as often. So how do we, take that opportunity and align both of them together, if we are due to update it? So I think it's a perfect opportunity to do both. Planning Commission will be driving the development of the comprehensive plan, and then City Council would be driving the strategic plan. And I think it'd be helpful to speak to maybe the high level differences between the comprehensive plan and the strategic plan.
So the differences, simply put, is often strategic plans are confused with either comprehensive plans or long-range plans. Mm-hmm. Strategic means strategic. It could be something that needs to happen tomorrow. It may be something that needs to happen 20 years from now. And it can be almost anything that might be on the plate of the local government. So it may be service related, it may be engagement related, it may be, as you were describing, intergovernmental. In other words, what's happening around us and IOP influencing what others are doing. That may be a strategic issue. So it's much broader than the comprehensive plan in one sense, and more narrow in another sense, in the sense that you're going to focus then on four or five major things that you're going to try to make sure happen in Isle of Palm. So often people will talk to me about strategic planning, and it should have a 5 or 10 year horizon. Well, maybe. I would argue, for instance, sea level rise is something that is immediate and 50 years, right? Mm-hmm. So there are things that are not focused so much on the time dimension, but on the sense of importance and the sense of urgency for the council and community to deal with it. So that's essentially what would be the difference between that. The comprehensive plan is and I'll defer to the planning director, but is obviously driven off the statutory requirement mm-hmm. of what you need to have as elements in the comprehensive plan. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Okay, I've got a couple of things.
Go ahead.
Okay. This is for my own understanding and partially curiosity. This the plan and the approach looks very similar to the balanced scorecard approach. I don't know if you're familiar with that.
I am, very.
It feels like a little bit maybe of a condensed version of the balanced scorecard, or kind of taking out a few different elements. Is that an accurate, just again for my own understanding, is that an accurate understanding of the approach?
So the balanced scorecard is often used as the metric and measurement tool for the strategic plan mm-hmm. once you're finished. So mm-hmm. is one of the things you'll have to decide is how are we going to monitor mm-hmm. that in a number of places, both private, nonprofit, mm-hmm. and public sector have used a balanced scorecard to do that. So the if you're familiar with the elements of the balanced mm-hmm. scorecard, those mm-hmm. focus areas then yep. become the top line, mm-hmm. and then the connection to the departmental yeah. work plans become, and then your what metrics you're going to use to evaluate your progress. So that typically becomes mm-hmm. the way you would then monitor the implementation.
Okay, I mean that makes sense. Go, were you gonna say
something? No, I agree.
And I guess when I say the balanced scorecard, that the entire process yes. it has to start with
yes.
these elements.
It starts with
this piece, and it culminates in
exactly.
in the actual scorecard itself. Yeah. But one of the critical components of that are the kind of roles of individuals that are part of an organization contributing to that. And maybe this is more commentary than question, but I will have a question at the end. I've spoken with Desiree a little bit about this, and from my perspective, this process, and there's obviously a lot of different ways that you can develop a strategy, and I don't think there's never a right or wrong answer in this type of thing. It's somewhat subjective. This strikes me as a very sound approach, and I like it, and I like the balanced scorecard, and that was a positive to me that it looked like there were many elements mm-hmm. of that planning process. Regardless of how good a process is, the outcomes are only as good as, to me, the buy-in from the folks who are involved.
Right.
And so we have, I think, three key kind of groups. Again, this is just my perspective, but as I conceptualize it, we've got staff, mm-hmm. we've got council, and we've got the community.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And I think we need really strong buy-in from all three for this to right. really truly be successful. And number one, I'll commend you on the approach so far. I think the way that we're going about it, and you iterated that as we go throughout the process, at each step, council will have a chance to review and reflect and give commentary. So I think all of those things, and merely us presenting this to council and getting council to say, yes, this is what we want to do, I think we're headed in the right direction. But it's so important and it's so critical. And frankly, it's a little bit of a concern for me, not because of you or the process, but just because of the people, not individuals, like in general, just humans. have you, I guess my question coming off of my soapbox is, what have you seen that from communities who have maybe tried to do this and haven't gotten the buy-in? What is it about? What have they done that has resulted in not getting buy-in? And what's the group of those three that's maybe most at risk, you think, of not really being bought in?
You want to start?
Go ahead, and I'll.
So, there are tons of stakeholders, right? But yeah, I think you've alluded to the three big stakeholder groups that are involved in both the process and then ultimately the implementation. So, the biggest risk is if council adopts something that is totally disconnected from what is the community's view of what those priorities are. And we can talk a minute about how you mm-hmm. sort of either identify or validate those. The second, and I will suggest to you, I think this is more often the case, mm-hmm. Is that the staff get presented something that they were not terribly engaged in, that they view as separate from the day-to-day work, so they're getting mixed messages about mm-hmm. where they should mm-hmm. be spending their time and resources, and so mm-hmm. aligning around that mm-hmm. is, I think, an incredibly important component to make sure that the staff both are engaged in this process and secondly understand how we're going to deal with the resource allocation mm-hmm. and their time to get the things done, that this is just not added on to the mm-hmm. other stuff that you tell them they got to do, right? Mm-hmm. So there's this balancing question that has to happen. So, I mean, those two are the typical ones where these things, you know, run into difficulty. I won't say they fall apart, but they run into difficulty. And then the third piece is councils change over time, mm-hmm. right? And so, you know, I'll pick one, you know, particularly for this region. You get a pro-growth council, you get a no-growth council, right? So what's that do to the strategic plan that was mm-hmm. developed prior, right? Mm-hmm. So the council has to almost always, at some point in time during the course of the year, sort of validate we're still on track to do this. And if you don't do that, then it becomes the thing that sits on mm-hmm. the shelf because it's no longer mm-hmm. relevant to the council's yeah. decision. So those three stakeholder groups, that's sort of the risks for each one of those. Mm-hmm. So if that makes sense.
And, you know, I would add, I think an advantage you have in Isle of Palms that often gets at the first point Bob made about identifying and validating the process with the citizens is that you have a fairly highly engaged group of citizens already. Mm-hmm. At least from what we've seen in past
yes. oh, yes.
things. And for what we have often seen as being a challenge is in communities where there's a small group of highly engaged folks who aren't really representative mm-hmm. of the population's interests overall or their wishes. And so, but they end up driving mm-hmm. those because they show up at everything and they're loud. And once we encourage a community to look beyond that group and really figure out what people care about, they get a much richer sense mm-hmm. of that. And I, you know, I really don't think, based on what we've seen, that that's nearly as much of a problem here as it is in some communities, that you have a large group of people who participate. They don't all agree, but you have good dialogue. And so at the end, there will at least be people, I think, who have been through the process. And we found that generally, even if people don't agree or they don't feel like their side came out on top in the end, as long as they feel like the process was fair, they will buy into it.
Does it help in those situations there where you're talking about maybe you have a sort of a vocal minority that weighs in and makes all the noise, so to speak, but you have a large group of residents, citizens, that, you know, work for a living, they don't have as flexible a schedule as maybe other people, and do they respond better to, like, written surveys if you can't have public forums that they can attend? How would you get their thoughts?
And that's what we have done in some communities, so one of your neighboring communities had this challenge where it seemed like the people who always showed up, that there seemed to be an overwhelming support for one side of an issue, but once we did a survey, we found that, gee, that's not really the case. The majority of folks actually mm-hmm. felt a different way, but they all reported that they didn't feel like it was worth their time showing up to meetings to mm-hmm. discuss that because mm-hmm. their voices were washed out. And so, so that's, yeah, you know, I think that really helped council and staff mm-hmm. feel a little more empowered regarding, you know, okay, so this isn't how everybody feels. It just seems right. like everybody feels mm-hmm. that way. Right. So, yes, often, you know, by doing, we've done that a number of times, written surveys or email surveys, or really showing up at places, because sometimes it's hard to get those people to come to you, but showing up at things that are already happening in those communities where we can say, can we have 15 minutes of your agenda to talk about this or 20 minutes, and mm-hmm. we get generally much better feedback that way than waiting for them to come to us.
And I would imagine this is common in all communities.
Yes.
It is. You're not alone.
Yes, yes.
We're not
right.
alone. We're
no.
not alone.
Yeah, and pretty much every community I've worked yeah. with, this has been
right.
a challenge. So.
Right.
How do you strike that balance between, you know, the community engagement, face-to-face, community meetings, workshops, versus the other component that may be a little bit broader to try to get more engagement? Is that sort of a decision that the city would make?
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the first would be to sort of understand what current information you have based mm-hmm. on your surveys, your forums, and all of the things that you've done to date. And the council would then, with obviously a recommendation from you, do we need to do more or less, right? Do we need to to update this, or are we good with where this starts and wait till the end of the, sort of the first phase and then get some reaction to it? Those are decisions you make based on the, what you believe is the validity of the content at that particular time.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so back to the citizen input mm-hmm. thing, the so to Kendra's point about go where people are, I have a friend, mayor and city manager, who now do budget and brew. They go to, they take the budget on the road to basically brew houses around the town, and it's amazing the different content that you get.
Yeah, I think we could get some vendor sponsors.
Windjammer and Coconut Jones.
You know?
There we go.
Yeah. Go where they are.
Yeah. Interesting.
I think, so for the, some of the challenges that you presented, this solution, you presented the solution as well, but I just want to make sure that we reinforce it in presenting to council, because I think it will resonate with the rest of our fellow council members, which is the challenge of the disconnect between council and community, and then the turnover in council.
Right.
Because if you solve that disconnect, the turnover is less important as long as it's constant, if it's up to date. And that was my last question, was around how we keep this fresh and keep it, you know, I think having the implementation component resolves the dust collecting in the short term. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The long term is that we have a mechanism to keep it up to date and keep it refreshed,
right,
and make sure that we're addressing the strategies that emerge over time.
Right.
Or not the strategies, the challenges that need strategies, right, or the opportunities. Mm-hmm. The opportunities and challenges. Yep. So I didn't necessarily, I kind of saw that in some of the sample plans from Anderson and Norfolk, but I guess that would be the one thing that maybe wasn't quite in the presentation. Yeah.
So you didn't see them, because both of those have just finished, so they haven't really even gone through. I mean, they were just adopted. Mm-hmm. So so I can tell you, and I'll use the Norfolk one as an example. They're going to have an appendix to their budget that will connect to the strategic plan, so it'll go through all the things that are typically in the budget, but then align them around the strategic plan, so you could basically mm-hmm. do a crosswalk, mm-hmm. which then allows the council at each budget opportunity to sort of both revisit the plan mm-hmm. and what the set of priorities are. So mm-hmm. that's just one option of a way mm-hmm. to sort of keep it sort of relevant and mm-hmm. And also make sure you're aligning your resource decisions with the kinds of things you want to accomplish. Mm-hmm. That's just one example. There are plenty of other ways to do that, but that's one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I guess that makes sense. The one thing that I would look for, and this might come more so from staff in this process, but I just want to like have this ingrained of like, we are we're building in this mechanism to be constantly capturing community feedback, and that feedback is making its way into
sure.
The constantly updated, yep. refreshed strategic plan.
Yep.
But this is fantastic. I'm so excited to embark upon this, and excited for you to present to full council. And I think you have a question, but the action today is really just to give input before full council, correct?
Correct.
So again, I agree totally. For the last couple councils we've had, and we change every 2 years, mm-hmm. Not totally, but we have overlapping elections. But overall, everybody is about the residents, and that's what we're really putting the most emphasis on, is trying to get resident involvement. Mm-hmm. On your demographics, you know, just an environmental scan, please don't shoot me when I say this. I know we just are going through the census as we yeah. do things right now, and you know, we're probably maybe 200 people at the most, because there's just not that much turnover here. And we're historically a second home island. But the demographics region, if I were to go to Wikipedia and then compare it to y'all's, how do y'all get your information for our population and population growth and age? Or if I went to Wikipedia, would I get it there? And please don't shoot me when I say that. It's just, 'cause I rely on that stuff a lot, believe it or not.
So normally you would go to the typical sources that would be available to the staff, And then what you try to do is, are there particular slices of that data that would be of interest to you? For instance, how long people have lived on the island today versus what was the case 15 years ago? Has that changed? Or, you know, there are different ways to slice that data to be relevant to the decisions you want to make. So it really is, you're getting most of the available data, either from census or from the state or from the Council of Governments. Those are the kinds of things. Plus, you probably have your own data sources. It would be just analyzing those. Is there certain questions we want to ask of that data and cut it in a different way to be able to get that information? So we're not going to generate any new census data, but what you want to do is perhaps frame it with different kinds of questions that you can then go deep into that data to see if you can extract that information.
Good. I'm good.
Same here.
Y'all have any questions for us?
When do we show up at council?
I will.
We'll talk about that later. Okay, good.
Soon.
Soon.
Okay.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you all.
Nice to meet you.
I will say it's something that council has been talking about for quite a while, so I know that they're going to be excited to get this process underway. And I welcome, excited to see what other, the other council members think about this process and get their input and buy in, and we can mm-hmm. start.
At least four times a meeting, somebody says, but we don't have a strategic vision.
Yeah. so we're going to solve that.
Take that off.
You're scratching an itch.
Well, thank you all very much.
Thank you.
It was so nice to meet you.
Yeah, you too.
Thank you.
No handshaking.
Yeah, that's true.
I hate that, I'm
all right, moving on to new business item B, consideration of code enforcement position and job description.
Okay, as you all know, we have been talking about what are some of the ways that we can address the concern that the city may be leaving some money on the table when it comes to business license enforcement. We have talked internally about what are the options available to address that concern. We do believe that we have an opportunity to address the enforcement component of that. We looked at what things we could do from an application and documentation standpoint, but that just becomes so time-consuming and it's not quite as effective. So in looking at what are alternatives do we have available to address that issue, I had a conversation with Chief Cornett, Wynette, and Douglas about potentially looking at consolidating two part-time positions currently in the police department that have been vacant for some time. One is the part-time animal control officer. It's a part-time position, but it includes benefits, so that's already built in the budget. We have not filled that in about a year because, once Chief Cornett came in and, had an opportunity to assess his department, we didn't find a need to fill that. We already have a full-time animal control officer. The other opportunity here is related to the currently budgeted beach service officers positions. We budget for 10. We rarely... if you don't mind coming into the table, Wynette and Chief, that way you're here. And Douglas, you may.
You're up so late.
there's an opportunity to combine part-time animal control officer with a part-time BSO position. Doing that gives us enough funds currently in the budget that would not represent any additional cost to the city, and just realigning, restructuring these two positions into one that would be mainly responsible for code enforcement. It won't be the only thing that that person in this position would do. They would also have some component of maybe 20% of their work would be associated with beach services and not other code enforcement, the sign ordinance, noise, but mainly related to business license. We have found that we don't currently, or the way that we handle code enforcement, it's not very consistent. We don't have somebody that will drive around the island looking for these violations, stopping at construction sites, asking folks for a business license, stopping, you know, and talking to a landscaper, and making sure that they're properly licensed. There is a challenge, and I'll let Chief Cornett speak to that, about having a uniformed certified police officer doing this type of work. I think our advocacy would be for this to be a civilian position, and that's how it's being presented. You know, we don't necessarily need somebody with a badge and a gun asking folks for a for a business license. So, you know, this proposal here, you know, as personnel needs to approve job descriptions, we've presented this. We want to talk a little bit about, you know, the reason why we think that this is a good idea. We believe that we can fit it within the current organizational structure of the police department. Doesn't cost the city any additional funds. You know, equipment is on hand. It would be reallocated to this position. The funds are included, and it's a revenue generator, generating position too. So, Chief, do you want to?
Can I recap?
Sure.
Please.
Yes.
What I just heard is, we want to create a new position that doesn't increase headcount, that doesn't increase budget, that increases revenue.
Correct.
Okay.
We think it's a no-brainer, but you know, obviously, want to give an opportunity for anybody to ask any questions and feel comfortable with, you know, what we have in mind. And we think it's a good idea. We think that it's something that we've been lacking for quite some time, and really, you know, it's not going to help the enforcement, but I think it's going to help Douglas's world too, having somebody that's going to be dedicated to addressing these issues, and not necessarily having to send Douglas up to issue tickets. Mm-hmm. So he's happy about it.
What kind of training would this entail?
So it depends on how far we go into the code enforcement world. There are different certifications that code enforcement officers can get. It would not be a building official code enforcement, but there are code enforcements for things like this that they could do. We incorporated this in my last department, actually, and the reason we did so was because we had it on our police officers at first, and the biggest complaint we got was that it was a little overbearing for somebody to show up with a gun and a badge to say, hey, you need a business license, or hey, your grass is too tall. So we kind of stepped back and said, how can we do this in a more friendly way? Mm-hmm. And I will say, when we did implement it in that manner and had somebody who designated as their role to go and find people who were violating codes like business license, signs in the roadway, the encroachment violations, the tall grass, those types of things, we did see a better approach to it, and we did see a better response from the people who were obtaining those business licenses or who were in violation. And we saw more compliance. And at the end of the day, that's really what we're looking for, is compliance, not citations. But sometimes it takes a citation to get to compliance. So I think, in my experience, I've seen this play very well for the city. It'll be a great benefit to us. Code enforcement directly impacts law enforcement and public safety. You know, if we have a clean and aesthetically pleasing community, then we don't have that bad element that wants to come here. They don't feel comfortable. Mm-hmm. And so if we can do that and keep that going, then it's crucial to us too. It will help Douglas and his department. And as Desiree pointed out, we can do this without costing any additional money and still reduce headcount by at least one.
Right.
Yeah, you know, one of the things that we had talked about earlier was, you know, yes, police officers currently can do this work, but oftentimes police officers are tied up during calls for 3, 4, sometimes 5 hours. So having that consistency is important. Not only during the week, but the way that we have talked about structuring the schedule for this position is having a presence on the island on the weekends. So it would be a 40 hour a week position that would be distributed throughout the week to ensure that we have somebody Saturdays and Sundays, where oftentimes, you know, the landscaping companies are here, and you know, some of those smaller types of work happen. Painting, you know, that kind of stuff, to have somebody who could maybe catch some of the people that are working not in compliance.
Right. And this would not be a uniform position, as you talk. I mean, this
Correct. We don't like to call it civilian because it sounds like it's meaning. So we call it non-sworn.
Okay.
It's a non-sworn position. They would wear a polo shirt, very similar to what our BSOs wear. Is kind of how we would outfit them.
Would they have an Isle of Palms logo?
It would. Yes, okay. They would be identified as a member of the Isle of Palms Police Department. And we would give them all of their clothing. It's already built into the budget to outfit both the BSO and the animal control officer. So it's already there. We're really not adding anything at all to this.
To me, non-brainer.
Yeah. I didn't bring my brain today.
The world, you know, because there will be a slight, it will be covered in the budget, but there will be a slight increase in the fringes. Of roughly $1,000 because currently that percentage is based on a 30-hour a week employee. So that difference will be included, but it's nominal in the grand scheme of things, and it can be absorbed with the current budgeted funds for both positions.
And the revenue would probably support that anyway.
Yeah, I know. I think almost every week I hear about how Solomon's Island did that last year, and they increased the revenues by $300,000 for the first 8 months. Not saying, I mean, let's have realistic expectations here, but you know, it is something that will potentially self-fund over time.
Mr. Chair, on that position, I'm not sure if I'm saying this to Chief or to Douglas, but for our businesses to come out here, like the painters, landscapers, do they have a decal that's on their car that says they are licensed?
No, we do not. Yeah,
The difference from Sullivan's Island to Isle of Palms is I believe they had a decal for all their businesses, so it made them a little bit easier to capture.
Yeah.
So that's something we might consider. But I think this is a great move.
Yeah. I actually have wondered that, and I don't know, Douglas, if in the past, back when the city, the last time they revised the business license application, was that ever considered? And is there a reason why we...
Yeah, I can't... And I thought that I heard that Sullivan's Island did away with it for some reason. I don't know.
To keep things moving along, since that's not... Why don't you raise that up with the appropriate committee?
Yep.
Do you need a motion for this to go forward?
Yes. So personnel needs to approve the job description. It is still under review. Wynette has been working on this document with Chief Cornett. And, you know, Douglas will chime in as well. Just make sure that it's complete. But if it's okay with you all, you can make a motion to approve, knowing that the next time you'll see it, when it comes before full council, it may be slightly different. The content will be the same. But we'll just, you know, make some adjustments if needed.
I'd like to make a motion for consideration of a code enforcement position, job description that incorporates both positions, code enforcement beat service officers.
Second.
Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
The ayes have it.
Thank you.
Thank you, Lynette and Chief.
Thank you, guys.
They look good.
Yeah, they look really, really sharp.
They pop out.
Yep, I love it.
It matches the line of your...
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Brings it all together.
Really ties the uniform.
Yeah.
All right. Moving on to miscellaneous business. We have our next meeting date set for 9 a.m. on Tuesday, April 7th. All good?
Yep.
All right. And then I'd like to make a motion to move into executive session in accordance with 30-4-70A1 of the Freedom of Information Act to discuss appointments of persons to a public body for the Planning Commission vacancy.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Executive session? Any expletives you want to say or anything untoward?
All right.
It is 10:05 a.m. We are coming out of executive session. No decisions were made, I will, do we have any action that we want to take now? Any motions?
Yeah, I
can make a motion.
Okay.
I'd like to move that we invite Scott Pierce, Chris Marquez, and Marty Brown to interviews for the appointment to the Planning Commission.
Second that.
Any discussion? We have amazing candidates. We keep saying it, but our community keeps showing us how talented and experienced and smart and intelligent they are. And I hope that that some of these folks run for council. I hope that they continue applying for boards. I'm excited for the future.
We will contact each of the candidates, let them know about the next step, and we'll be reaching out to you all about availability to schedule interviews with the candidates.
Okay.
And that will be a structured sort of interview that we do, like we ask the same questions.
We have developed a list of questions. We'll send that to you all and give an opportunity to provide feedback on, you know, the type of questions that you would want to ask. But yes, it would be a list of structured questions that would be presented to each candidate.
Okay. And all in favor?
Aye.
Unanimous. Excellent.
Motion
to adjourn.
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.